thank you very much, and welcome everybody. I add my welcome to the list. Today we have the absolute pleasure of hearing from my friend, the absolutely charismatic and indefatigable Kerry Q. Kerry is an author, a humorist, she's a mathematician, a journalist. She is one of the wittiest and funniest people that you can meet. Now, Kerry studied science and engineering, and she has also taught mathematics and science for about 10 years before she became a best-selling author. She's published over 20 books, including the most recent publication, which is called Target 91, which talks about gun control in the US, and the Sunday Story Club. And I was lucky enough to be at the launch of the Sunday Story Club, and I really recommend that you get a copy. It's a beautifully written story, or series of stories, actually. She has written columns for every major Australian newspaper. Now, there's not too many journalists who have got that great accolade. Following the popularity of her blog, Maths Pig, which was obviously resonating very strongly with children and the young at heart, Kerry spoke at the International Congress of Mathematical Education in Hamburg in 2016 as a comic maths blogger. Kerry is a very well-known public speaker, has made an enormous contribution to the comedic but also the scientific platform here in Australia, and it's my very, very great pleasure to introduce her to you this evening. Please make Kerry very welcome.
Thank you, Michaela. Now, what an introduction. That was fantastic. I lived in fear of this talk because I was terrified I wouldn't remember which day Wednesday was. I mean, we're here in lockdown in Melbourne, and life is this one vague day running into another. But I'm here at the right time. So my aim tonight is just to enthuse about writing and hopefully encourage you to write and maybe give you a few tips. But I'll go back to how I started writing, and because I, when I was 18 years old, a friend gave me a book called My Family and Other Animals by Gerard Durrell. Now, if you know about him, he wrote about animals, basically, and his family growing up on Corfu, and it was hilarious. But at the time, I read it, and I thought, he thinks his family's funny. Ah, wait, he should meet mine. Then 10 years later, I thought, you know, I might do it. I might write about my family. And it became my first book. So my first book was called Crooks, Chooks and Bloody Rat Bags. And how it came about was when I was 10, we moved up to Kyneton in Victoria. My father was a local police sergeant and we lived on the police station. Now, we basically had the police phone in our kitchen, later the radio as well. The police radio, the FC Holden, my dad's maroon Holden with a pink door was the police car. They didn't have a police car, and mum fed the prisoners. And we had five kids. We had a dog, a cat, a budgie, chooks, ferrets. And so we fed all of them and the prisoners. You know, you'd walk in the door and mum would shove a tray in your hand and say, go feed the prisoner. And you'd have to sort of go over to this very old jail that had Ned Kelly in it. It was built in 1856, bluestone, and slide the meal under the grill, under the bars. But it was so chaotic in my household. I could only study because my dad organised me to have keys to the local courthouse, and I studied in the jury room. It was a beautiful big table, but it was that chaotic in the house, but it was so funny growing up. And I have to say this, the reason it was funny was my parents. They were a comedy duo. My dad was a straight man, a non-drinking, non-smoking Catholic policeman, and my mum was just a comedian, played in bands for 25 years, you know. This is the sort of thing that happened. Come Christmas, every Christmas, my mum would talk my dad into pinching a Christmas tree. And the conversation went like this. We're not going to the state forest to pinch a Christmas tree. We're not going to do it. Not the state forest, my mum would say. We'll just borrow one of those trees that's wandered out onto the side of the road. It's not really in the forest. And then come about midnight, they'd be driving out, and I went on a few of these trips to, you know, get a Christmas tree for free. And my And Dad would say, bloody lovely it would look. Bloody lovely if the local police sergeant's arrested for pinching a Christmas tree. Mum say, who's on duty? I am. Well, don't arrest yourself. That shouldn't be too hard. So always it was like this. This is another classic mum. This is the 60s, and chicken in those days was very expensive. You actually grew your own, you know, and someone had to do the deed, you know. And I can remember mum's friend, the local doctor's wife, ringing and saying, oh, Kath, I've got to kill Ethel and I just can't face it. So what they did was they went over and had a cup of tea and watched the chicken Ethel wandering around the yard thinking, what can we do? You know, poor Ethel, she's not. So what they decided to do was anaesthetise her. So they got chloroform from the doctor's surgery and a big sort of empty garbage thing, put in the chloroform, and Ethel passed away quietly without stress. And mum couldn't wait to hear what happened and rang her on Christmas Day and said, how did it go? How did the chicken go? She said, well, to be honest, it tasted like a giant cough drop. You could taste the chloroform, but the good news was no fights. Everyone fell asleep after lunch. So there's a little recipe you won't get on MasterChef. You might need it. Some families are just like that. I'd have to say my dad was old school. He was old school in many ways. He's an old, you know, he came back from the war. He's in the war for 6 years, you know. He came back later from New Guinea. And, you know, so they, you know, they didn't follow protocols, let me put it, that you would have in place today. So I can remember we'd sit listening to the radio, police radio, which was great fun. And I can remember him chasing a stolen car, propping up, and actually shooting at it with his .22. Now, that would not be standard protocol today, but he stopped that stolen car with one shot because he was probably aiming at the tyres. But what he did was he went through the bonnet and took out the distributor cap and it just went stopped. So that was quite a legendary story around our house. Unfortunately, he also blew out the window of our car because what happened was, as he got older, with his .22, he could see the sights on the rifle with his glasses on, but he couldn't see the rabbit running. But he put his glasses on, he could see the rabbit, couldn't see the sights. So he'd sort of shoot like this, and chasing some escapees one time, he saw them in the paddock and wanted to fire a, you know, warning shot, and called out, "Halt, police!" But of course, the window was wound up. He didn't see that, and just blew the window out of our own FC Holden. We thought that was hilarious. So when he came home, it was an accident. So can you imagine? I'd go back to university because I had to live in at university and tell people these stories. And that's how I started. They were just so funny. We would answer the police phone, one of the five kids in the house, and it'd be like this. Hello? Is that the police station? Yeah. Is the sergeant there? Nah. Oh, where is he? He's in the toilet. Dad always tried to say, can't you say he's occupied for the moment? That never happened. We also answered the radio. And so when we finally got a police car, the one, we'd pick up the radio. This is BKC Kyneton calling Kyneton Car 1. Kyneton Car 1 over. And then Kyneton Car 1 over. BKC Kyneton. Dad, you've got to come home for dinner. Over. And then we'd have, this is BKC Castlemaine, what's for dinner tonight? This is BKC Bendigo, over. Can we come too? So, you know, very funny on many, many ways. But feeding the prisoners, I mean, that was just something I thought everyone did. But of course, I found out later that was quite unusual. And my mum, we'd have to go over and then bring the tray back. And if they didn't eat their peas, she went over. Why didn't you eat your peas? You know the greens are good for you. She would say, all right, you don't like peas. Well, I will make sure you get beans. And so they got the same food as us. So if they complained, we could too. But what I wanted to talk about is looking back now. That was a small country town. The population was 3,999 for 20 years. I have spoken at Rotary a number of times, in Kyneton, of course. And what I realise is that, in a, you know, they talk about social networks today, you know, Facebook and all of those things, as if it's something new. Country towns invented social networks because when in a country town, you're connected to everyone somehow. So, you know, the doctor's receptionist played netball with your brother's girlfriend, that sort of thing. You were linked in everywhere. And so I think when reality TV came online, you know, if you lived in a country town, you weren't that interested because you lived it every day. You knew everyone and what they were doing. I mean, that's how it worked. And nothing, with all our communication breakthroughs, nothing was ever as good as the local exchange. Now, in Kyneton, our phone number for the police station was Kyneton 61. We had a party line through the police station. And we had to, in the beginning, this is for the younger members, actually stand at the phone and wind it so it would go through to the exchange. And you'd ring up one of the there were girls on the exchange, the blokes did it at night, and you'd say, could I be plugged through to Kyneton 49? And they'd say, oh no, they're out. They're over at Reynolds. Do you want me to plug you through there? They virtually were tracking everyone in the town. They knew what was going on. So that was how I grew up. But it was, and this is important, it was a community. You know, Rotary creates its community. And I liked hearing about what you're doing and how you go about it. And it's something that's lacking today. People think they don't have the time, but they are missing out on these connections. And in the country town, people were a part of this community all of their lives. So you'd have, you know, 80-year-olds selling tickets for the CFA and or being a part of Rotary or, you know, being a part of a golf club and organising events. So it was a community and that's what we lack today. And it's very important, I think, to get people connected back again. It used to be when I was growing up, churches and all sorts of social clubs from tennis to, you know, all of those we were in clubs. We were clubby people, you know. I played netball, basketball and hockey, you know, all of that. People don't anymore and they're disconnected. So Rotary is a part of that stretching out and bringing people back into a community. Now, so I became a published author in 1983. I won a competition at the Adelaide Arts Festival, Writers Festival in 1982 for an unpublished manuscript. Now, so this was stories about my family and I changed a few names thinking I was smart. Well, that didn't work. They knew who I was talking about for sure. But first of all, we sold a lot of books because my mum would go around town and say, you're on page 43. See, that's a guaranteed sale. I can tell you that. And I went on radio and TV. Well, this became hilarious. So this is the first book, okay? Now, that's the first edition because that was published in Adelaide by, it was called Rigby. And then Penguin took over later and brought out more editions. And so I went on radio and TV and I have no problems talking. But this is the thing I found out. They don't read the book. So you'd go on radio, and I'm all novice to this, and you realise they have no idea what it is that you've written. So you start from scratch and tell them. But because I'm a humorist, what I thought was, I'm going to have no reviews on my first book. I know what I'll do. I'll write them myself. I'll make them up. So here's one, and this is on the back of this book. It says, an expose of family life that will send many an Aussie mum racing to the bathroom cabinet. The Valium Daily. That was the name of the newspaper I was supposedly quoting. And I went even on the ABC and the interviewer said, oh, you've got a very good review in the Valium Daily. And I couldn't say, oh, you idiot, that's a joke. So I had to say, yes, I did. The Valium Daily, great read. So that's the sort of trouble you get yourself into when you sort of think you're being funny. But the other thing was, back in the 80s, we went on so many TV shows. There was In Ballarat Tonight with Fred Farquhar, Toowoomba Today, and we went up the East Coast, and that you'd go on different TV shows. It was all localised. And now, of course, it became centralised in the major cities, and now it's global. You know, it's so that we've lost something of that connection locally again. I mean, that is the sad thing. So one of my great experiences, and I did it many times, is going on the Midday Show with Ray Martin. Now, you get 4 minutes. So, and they say that's live and there are a million people viewing. Oh, that's the way to really relax you, isn't it? So, and 4 minutes for me, I could tell my whole life story in 4 minutes and have 2 minutes left over. So, you know, I went on, and this is what I found. It was so bizarre. First of all, he's a very professional interviewer, and he knew when I was talking, I was on camera. He wasn't, so he was reading his notes. And I was talking to the top of his head. I was a school teacher. I felt like saying, hit me, right? Look at me while I talk. I don't do that. So I turned, because the audience was sort of more to the left, and talked to the audience. They didn't like that either, because I'm in profile to the camera. So they held up, the floor manager held up a sign saying, Kerry, look at Ray while you talk. So back to the top of his head. That's not so bad, but he is a serious interviewer. So they prep me. They have, for each segment of the show, a producer. They said, now all they want is some funny stories. I can do that. But what's the question about 2 minutes in? All right, all of this has happened in 2 minutes. Ray Martin asked me. It was a serious question. Have you thought about what you might write in your next book? And I'm like, my brain had not passed this 4 minutes. I had not looked even to lunch. That was the deep, dark future. I could only see to the end of this 4 minutes. And I'm like, probably babbled a bit and then learnt that politician's soft shoe shuffle. And I said, that's an interesting question, Ray. But I've got to tell you the story about blah, 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 blah. And off I went and got the funny story in. So at least I managed to do that. The other process that for your first book, which is an experience, is being edited. Many advantages to being edited. But I had arguments with the editor because I was using Aussie slang of the time, the Aussie idiom. Like, and she'd say, I'd say you dob in someone, and she'd say, no, you dob on someone. And so we'd argue about that. And this went on for ages, and I got the galleys, and I'm looking through, and this has changed things, and I'm not happy, but I'm not going to argue too much until I got to this little sentence. And it was I have to tell you, I'm not a great speller. So being edited has its advantages. And I had put in, my brother's running out into the snow in Kynan, in bare feet, in pyjamas for the first time, and shivering like a newborn foal. And I read the galleys and they've got shivering like a newborn chicken. How dare they? So I cross that out, put foal back. But of course, you know what I put? Foul, F-O-U-L. That's why she put chicken, but it came out as foul, which is even worse. I have to admit. But the language of those books, so I'm writing in the 80s, about the 60s. And all that language is gone. It's dead. Drongo, cocky for a farmer, galah, struth, too right, no hoper. I had to study the language to make sure it wasn't just one, my family, or just Kyneton. And I did find some words that are just local. And one of them, which I think should be more widespread, but I didn't put it in the book, was doing a grandie, G-R-A-N-D-I-E. And what that was back in the 60s was someone got in their FJ Holden with the, foxtail on the aerial, drove to the town limits. This is a young fellow, did a U-turn and drove back through Kyneton to the other town limits and did a U-turn. And that was the grand tour. So it was a grandie. I think I'll drop a grandie now. So that was how much entertainment there was, because The Shire Hall only had films on every second Saturday. So not a lot to do in Kyneton. The other funny thing was, having studied all this language and writing about Kyneton, the book stayed in that first edition in the Kyneton Library for well over 30 years. And it was much loved, which I'm very thankful for, and then it had to be retired. And they didn't have the heart to throw it in the dumpster. And my sister couldn't wait, my younger sister, who still lives up there, couldn't wait to ring me and say, to tell me, guess where you've ended up? You're in the museum. So I am now a museum piece. How lucky am I? So I'm interested in language, and I'll mention that a little bit later on, because I feel our literary writers are beautiful writers, but they don't really celebrate much of the language. And it's especially in the country where there is still a lot of Aussie lingo going on. And in fact, professors studied it, and we have over 4,000 diminutives. You know, as Aussies like to shorten words. So there are Barbies, Sunnies, Veggies, Telly, you know, all of that. And of course, the words ending in O, like Journo and Porno, Steve-O. So we have all 4,000 words, and that is a language in itself. And that's why people struggle often when they arrive thinking we speak English. Well, not exactly English. And having written a book in American, which is a whole other story, I've just finished a manuscript and I wanted an Aussie character, because our literary writers, I haven't read them all, so I just feel they don't want to put too much in because it will not appeal to an international audience. But I love our language. And so I've started writing it. A car bomb goes off in Royal Parade, might as well start central, go big. And I'm actually putting in, I've got a glossary at the back of the book to explain some of the language. And the history's fantastic. Carcat, for instance, that's still being used. And for those who don't know, it's to die. But actually, it's British. It comes to us by British military occupation of India. And the reason for that is that kark, spelled K-H-A-A-K, means, I've got it written down here, it's dirt in Urdu and ash in Hindi. So it's ashes to ashes, dust to dust, you kark it. So biblical, isn't that amazing? And I have since heard it in a British sitcom. So it is, but it's considered vulgar over there, but not here, you kark it. So that's one way to die. Another way is cactus. You know, a cactus you can go. And where cactus came from is from a beach in South Australia, just on the border of the Nullarbor Plain. It's so remote, you know, they thought all it needs is a cactus. And it's a surfer's term from the 60s. Because it has a reef, and if you fall off too early surfing, you're cactus, you're done. So I just love how this language has evolved and we keep using it. So I want the next book to be a celebration of these strange things, but of course you get into trouble. I was interviewing two young girls in Yokohama who studied at Kilmore in Victoria. So their parents chose a school in Kilmore from Yokohama, and they said to me, oh, we studied veggie maths. What is that? Now, again, that's the Aussie way. That meaning, it's really for vegetables, but I felt I should be diplomatic, and in an instant came up with the answer, oh, I believe it's like soup. It's got a bit of everything in it. So that's the writing for the books. Now, I've only gone through really the first book. I also thought at the time, oh, I should write for newspapers. And newspapers, you know, if you could provide something different, I did a CAE course 1 week. I got one idea from it, which was, if you can provide ideas they don't have, you can have a career. So I thought, freelance journalism. So I thought, right, I'll do that. I'm sure I can. And so I wrote columns in newspapers, usually an op-ed for years, 22 years in one newspaper, the Advertiser in South Australia, or probably 18 years in the Herald Sun, but also the AJ. Anyway, so this is the sort of article I would write. I went to a $2 shop one day, and so I found a face cream. I thought, oh, this is cheap. And so I wrote an article, girls, I found this face cream. You have got to get it. It is so cheap. You can probably, you know, those Clarifiance tonic costs $150. This one's so cheap, you could buy a 44-gallon drum of it and just dunk your whole head in. And it's honest, it's called, and this was true, anti-wrinkle gel. Guaranteed improvement in 14 days. Give it a year, you'll look like a fetus. And I put a little disclaimer at the end of the article, which was, apply daily and avoid gravity for the next 20 years. Well, they got inundated with letters at two newspapers, where do you get it? Now, how do you answer an 80-year-old, you know, where, they still wanted it. That's what was, that astounded me, because I thought I was joking. And the other thing that I should add, this is from my chemistry background, legally they can't do anything, because if they can do something, they can only look as if they do something. If they can actually do anything, anti-wrinkle creams, they have to be tested, and they're a pharmaceutical. Just thought I'd throw that in. I did an article on that too. But dealing with the general public is so funny. I wrote an article once about the rock group Kiss doing its 500th reunion tour. And I was having a go at them. They're only in their 50s now, I realise. But I was saying that, look, with those platform heels, they're in their 50s, heading to 60. If they go down, they're not getting up in a hurry. Well, I didn't know this, but there is a dedicated Kiss army out there somewhere, probably still. And my favourite letter of abuse was, how could anyone whose byline photograph looked as though she was knitting cardigans at the crucifixion criticise the Lords of Thunder? How could she? Who knows? So that's the sort of thing. Another one I remember, but just to show how you can't anticipate it, I did write in one article that I would rather kiss an ugly toad than kiss Prince Charles. It was in context. It was sort of funny, I guess, at the time. No royalists complain. Nothing to say, how dare you, da, 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 da. I did get a letter, and this was the letter writing days. I did get a letter from the Toad Appreciation Society saying toads aren't ugly. So there, now you have been informed. Just keep that in mind. But one of the funniest responses was, I wrote an article, and I still read the science journals, and I found a study that showed, we're always worried about longevity for men, you know, extending their lives. And I found a study that showed there's one group who lived on average 15 years longer than all other men. And that group is eunuchs. So I wrote this article suggesting that this will be the new health push of the government, and we've already got the slogan for them and the bumper sticker. It will be snip, snip for the longer trip. Well, I won't even tell you what the phone calls were with that one. Too complicated. So not everyone gets the humour, I can say. And look, there are other challenges when you're writing that you don't expect. Here's a little book I wrote. It's called How to Save the World Before Breakfast, a magazine for young super kids. But when we wrote it, when I first wrote it, I was threatened to be sued by DC Comics and Warner Brothers because we had dared to put the word young superheroes on the cover. They made us pop the first cover. They wanted to see the manuscript, and I had to, over a weekend, rewrite because they claimed rights they didn't have. Now, the first reason is parody laws didn't come into Australia until 2006. So you couldn't claim as it was a parody. And the reason we couldn't use the word superheroes is not copyright, it's a trademark. And so you cannot, it'd be like putting Coca-Cola on a bottle of drink, you know, you can't put an equivalent on a book. So that was a little, you know, fun exercise, I have to say. Now, as Michaela kindly noted, I've published two books last year, Wasn't that lucky? If it had been this year, goodness knows what would happen. And what madness. I did buy some books of Target 91, so you can always email me. I'm sure we can do a deal. I bought them for this talk, but of course I can't quite push them through the screen. But I've been fascinated with American gun culture. And look, the publisher themselves, so it was published by Penmore Press in Tucson, Arizona. And they said that, you know, the outsider's view provided, even though it's humorous and it seems unlikely, but humour, insight and compassion about this whole gun debate. And just to give you a little inkling of how crazy the gun laws are, in Ohio, for instance, it is if a blind person went into a gun shop, they and asked for a gun, they have to be sold one, because Ohio has very weak gun laws but very strong disability laws. So a blind person can buy a gun. Let's not even think about how crazy that is. But there are stories like that all the way through. And so I was fascinated by this. Writing in American, ooh, 2 minutes. Okay, so, have I got 2 minutes to go?
No, but you have plenty of time. You can, like you said with Ray Martin, you can do a lot in 2 minutes, Gary.
Okay. Well, I wanted to give you some hints, okay, about writing. So I'm glad. I see how that was very good that you held up the sign, or you would have had to, I don't know, pull out the plug.
Keep going up until midnight.
What I wanted to say to you, everyone can be a writer. And I'm hoping that you're thinking about writing about your own life. And one way of doing it, I write because it helps me think. It sorts my brain out. If I'm trying to understand something, by writing it down, I can think. And I hope that you would think of writing about your own life. But what you need to ask yourself is questions that skip you away from the standard narrative. Everyone has a standard narrative about their life. But I'd rather ask you a question like, what was the one experience in your childhood that changed your life? You know, it could be a person, it could be an experience. I would say now, looking back, I went to the convent in year 8. They didn't teach maths to girls. Can you believe that? I was very young, and I said to Mum and Dad, I think I want to do maths. And so they said, oh, I can go to the high school, which was a big thing for Catholic parents back in those days. And they did teach maths. And I did go on to university with maths. Now, imagine, I was 11. I went to uni at 16. So that's when I decided to do maths. And you suddenly realise, wasn't that incredible? Because my parents agreed. That's what was incredible in those days. And the next thing I want to talk about is you access your memories through the detail. It's not the big story. What takes you in is the detail. And I'll give you an idea. If I was to talk about my childhood, there are little things some of you will remember. Things like this: sawdust on the butcher's floor. Or it could be your mum made shirts white with Ricketts blue. We didn't have detergents back then.
That's right.
It was drinking free milk, the free milk at schools for those of us who were in the 50s and into the 60s. And it sat in the sun and it went yellow at the top and was lumpy. But we still drank it. We did anyway. But you can see what that does. If you start with the detail, it takes you into your story in a different way. So what I'm encouraging you to do is to just try and find that different pathway in. And the final thing is, why not you? Why shouldn't you be a writer? There will be writers among you, but why shouldn't you write your story of your life? Why shouldn't that be interesting? Because that's been my motto all along, is why not? I mean, I was lucky because I hadn't read all the great works of everyone. I did science engineering, so I wasn't intimidated. And, you know, I got better, I think, as I went along. But, you know, it is a really important thing to do, if only for your family or others as well. Now, I thank you very much for your time. How am I, Renata? Did I get in?
You're doing great. You're doing great. And there are some great questions here for you as well.
Far away.